This is At the Races with Steve Beck.
We're back, hour three, and in fact, 10 minutes in, and Ed DeRosa standing by. Good morning.
Good morning.
I don't know if you were listening, but, you know, Sid wanted to send regards. He said your Twitter missives are one of the things he misses most about not being on the format anymore.
And I was just thinking the other day, proud of him for sticking to it. It's not easy. I've taken my sabbaticals, which is always good to do, but always come crawling back. And he's managed to let it stick for now. So I appreciate that, but definitely miss. You know, we're pretty simpatico, so it was always he was a welcome resonance in the echo chamber.
Well put. I also, our exchange this week, in part included, you know, being just sort of crestfallen. I gotta be honest. Tina's on vacation this week, and she always, you know, with the President's Day coordination, invariably is off, you know, this week from school, and it has coordinated two of the last 4 years with my trips to New Orleans. And this is typically, you know, after Vegas, this has, you know, become kind of the, you know, the season leading into the prep schedule. So, missing New Orleans on Saturday, after I put up selections, I sent out a series of restaurant favorites, and we crossed paths. When I talked about Ruby's, I talked about Ruby Slipper, and somebody came back, and I said, well, if you're looking for an alternate, you know, check out Houdat Cafe in the Marigny. And you followed up, and I was tickled when you went there and were blown away by the Not Your Mama's Corn Cakes.
Yeah, that and I'd actually, you know, forgotten. You just go to a bunch of places, and I sometimes need that jog. But looking it up, I was like, yeah, I remember, you know, Steve sending me there, and it was good enough to post about. Sure enough, there it was in all its glory, and it was fantastic and, you know, freshly made and all that good stuff, as you would expect with any restaurant recommendation in that part of the country. So, there. And Chalk, the champ, sent me to a place in Baton Rouge that was just out of this world when I drove up to Louisiana Downs from Fairgrounds. So, you expect to have good food, and always good to be pointed to the truly superlative places in a spot where most are good anyway.
Well, and it what's amazing about, and maybe it's problematic when you go to New Orleans, and for those that, you know, that have never been, it just can't be recommended, you know, strongly enough. Risen Star Week or Louisiana Derby Week. If you want to coordinate with Mardi Gras, invariably Risen Star is on one side or the other of the Easter schedule. So you end up, we got to New Orleans. I think the first time she came, Mardi Gras just wrapped up. And so things were, you know, the vestiges were everywhere. and then the most recent one, 2 years ago in 19, when Tina came and met me there, it was just starting, much like the schedule this year as well. But you just can't beat it. The problem is, once you start going a couple more than once, you end up with certain places that are your favorites, and yep. There's so much to change. So you go to the same joints, there's places you want to go to that you just, by the time your dance card is full.
I feel like there should be some sort of German word for the fear of missing out when you already like something that might even be better. But yeah, as the kids say, the struggle is real. You know, Vegas has that to a certain, really any big city, I guess, is going to have that to a certain extent, but especially New Orleans, where it just seems like it's so personal what people like. And, you know, they're passionate about, you know, whether it's the beignets or various dishes that are native to that area. You know, it's so personal of what's best and avoiding the tourist traps. But, you know, sometimes the places are that popular for a reason. So just kind of balancing, you know, wanting to be a little different with what might be better. Yeah, it's as challenging as handicapping the card at fairgrounds.
Well, and, you know, somebody brought up on that thread on Saturday, they brought up a place that I have not been able to get into. Tina and I tried to get in without a reservation, and we were going to wait, and we were inside, and we were sort of in line, but it might have been, you know, 2 more hours. But you got in, and I'm talking about Giacchimo's on Oak Street. And that's the Carrollton, it's one of my favorite neighborhoods, right at where the St. Charles line you know, basically makes a hard right turn. And you just get off there, and Oak Street from start to finish is out of this world. But you got to Giacchimo's.
I did. I had to look it up. It's one of the good things with social media. It does provide sort of a diary. And, 5 years ago, we mentioned on Friday I was there. Looks like I got the fried green tomatoes and snapper and lemongrass broth. It does look fantastic. The spelling, I actually did not know how it was spelled until I went to make a reservation.
Well, that was a funny, you and I talked about this like 3-4 years ago because you were looking it up the way any horse player would, Giacomo, and it's Jacques-IMO, Giacchimo's. And so you were having trouble, and I had heard it referenced by a lot of people as well as someplace unique and original. And, you know, they've got that famous, there's a lot of alligator, tie-in. They've got alligator andouille sausage, and mm-hmm. they got the shrimp and alligator cheesecake that they call it. And I every time we've tried to go, we've been turned away. Now, that doesn't mean on Oak Street you're finished, because we ended up going to the end of Oak Street, and there's a place called Cowbell that is just delightful, very small, and it's got a little outdoor patio. And we ended up at the time that Tina and I tried, we ended up at Cowbell, and we walked the length of Oak Street. There's a fabulous bakery called Bakery on Oak, which is a real artisanal style bakery, a modern bakery that is tremendous. So I'd recommend that too. There's all kinds of little craft and artist, enclave type places, and there's a great little graphic shop for t-shirts, and sort of across the street, a very small little place. And I love Oak Street. There's so much, and of course there's also up there at the top of Oak, there's the Camellia Grill, which is a burger and steak and a shake joint, counter service that is an institution for locals. Camellia Grill.
I definitely miss the countertop style.
Would,
do they give you the extra in the tin, the sidecar?
You know what? I think they do, actually, in the milkshake. I think they do serve it with the can right there on the. Yeah, I think you're onto something there, Ed.
Well, that's enough for me to check it out for a while. Yeah.
Well, Matt Carruthers, who. And Matt didn't specify. I'm going to guess he went to Tulane, because if ever, honest to God, Matt Carruthers, I'm assuming he went to Tulane. He looks like every single guy from Tulane I've ever met. Right?
Well, except Craig Burnick.
Did Craig Burnick go to Tulane? Okay.
Yeah.
He's Green Wave? All right. All right. Well, he looks like every Jewish guy from Tulane. I read.
he did go to Tulane, class of 91.
Unbelievable. He with that tassel of that towhead hair, he might be a fraternity brother for all I know. A Deke, there's a great Deke house at Tulane. Look at you, Frank Magooey. Magooey's the greatest. Magooey says it's graffiti graphics on Oak. Thank you, Frank.
That's the
burger spot is Camellia Grill. That little T-shirt shop, and we also they got beautiful kitchen towels that have we got kitchen towels with streetcars on it. Terrific little joint. Thanks, Frank. I put up a picture of Magooey Saturday. I missed being there, and you can tell. Tina and I have a funny gag wherever we go. Wherever we go, we'll be driving around or in the streetcar when we're in New Orleans, and we look at each other, and I'll say to her, "We could live here." And we go to Philadelphia, we're walking around the neighborhood, Center City. We could live here. Everywhere we go, and it's certainly true in New Orleans and Savannah.
I would. I definitely missed the trip down there for sure, and NHC as well, which hopefully later in the year we'll be in a spot in August, and fairgrounds will have to wait for even longer than that. But like I said, Friday, a big part of the racing experience, if you're in a position to be able to do it, and certainly applies to Horseman and their employees. As well, that gets to travel on a circuit, et cetera. But, just going to the bars around the track and the food people like to eat and, seeing horsemen there, it's a rare component to a major sport and certainly one I have really embraced.
No, I agreed. And I know that there's, a certain degree of, I don't know if animus is the right word. Maybe it is about merchandising the sport as a lifestyle, the lifestyle concept. And that, kind of draws a certain amount of ire. But when it comes to this, the tourism aspect, it does resonate, and it is valuable, and it shouldn't be, under marketed or underappreciated, because it's one of the really pleasurable components. And it's funny, as the business ed, we're watching the business numbers, and there's been, a lot of discussion about the impact of ADW play and contribution to, purse accounts, et cetera. And it does, I suppose, miss, this part of the discussion about, the movable feast, as it were, going from track to track, because you do see the same people at the same places on an annual basis. I've talked about this in my experience with the barbecue at Saratoga, and people, I would see certain people, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday of the second week of the meet every single year. And there's a certain harmony to that, that is very important. It's integral to, to the ambiance of racing venues.
And I think, I agree with you. There is that sort of balance that I'm sensitive to of the lifestyle aspect of the sport. And I would say a lot of times I wish it were more meat and potato emphasis than surf and turf. Not that we don't have discretionary income and, it's important to get us to spend that. That's what makes any industry go, is getting people to reach into their wallet. But, the happiest, times, that I think of when I'm socializing, whether it's at the track, it's, you know, around beers or hitting the food truck or, you know, barbecue stand like you had and around the track. Not that I don't enjoy a fine meal every now and then. I certainly do. But, you know, Mr. D's after the million for wings and BSing with everybody about bad beats or whatnot is as enjoyable as it comes when it comes to the racetrack environment. And, you know, that's part of the experience for me. And I think any track offers that. I mean, that's the beauty of racing. And New Orleans is obviously a great town. And Hot Springs is a place I never would have ever gone to without the racetrack there. But now that I have and have met the people and they've taken me to their places and, you know, people that grow up in Arkansas. And I mean, you sense the pride that they have, that this is their track. And, you know, especially the places that haven't gone completely Racino, and I'm just thinking of my own Thistledown. I mean, it's not the same going back, but it's a casino now versus what it was growing, what I grew up with. And Oaklawn, to its immense credit, has found a way to toe that balance because it is a full-fledged casino resort at this point. But I have no doubt that the soul of that racetrack is unchanged over the last 30, 40 years.
And, you know, it continues to evolve. And there are, yeah, there's places that have adjusted or, you know, managed to maintain the atmosphere. And then there's those that are overhauled. I haven't been to River since the conversion to Belterra.
I have not to be a homer, but I have high hopes that Turfway is going to still maintain that sort of gritty element that I think some Cincinnatians related to it. When you think of all the cities that have multiple racetracks, I would think Cincinnati is pretty low on the population list. And they have two thoroughbred and then just north on your way to Dayton, two standardbred tracks. This is definitely a metropolitan area that has supported racing. And I expect that to continue even with the overhauled Turfway and the machines coming in, et cetera. I think people are hopefully going to still find the same soul of Turfway that was there and the, you know, what they grew up with.
Well, and two factors, the two things that can factor into this. I mentioned, Ed, with you coming on, and I got to go back to my mail. Where is it? I'll do it on the phone because that's where I first saw it. Word coming for those that are excited about Keeneland, news release in the last hour. From the track, a limited number of fans will be able to attend the spring meet, April 2nd to 23rd, and the details will be announced. Ticket packages and process will be announced on March 1st, so a week from Monday. And limited access to race participants, sponsors, box holders, and club members. At least there'll be, you know, some attendance. And of course, we keep hearing and watching for how Churchill is going to handle the Derby specifics. Breeders' Cup with an announcement in the last couple of weeks about, you know, they're in the same boat. So I had Pat McKenna last Friday talk about Naira anticipating Saratoga. So, you know, slow but sure, it feels like, you know, there's the doors open a crack, and we're certainly headed more in the right direction than wrong.
Feels that way, thankfully. You know, the vaccine rollout, I'm sure, will help, and, you know, warmer weather as well. Churchill does have tickets on sale. I believe it's through Derby, as you noted. Oaks and Derby still somewhat in flux, probably awaiting, you know, some box holders to commit, et cetera. But for those interested in Derby week, which kicks off April 24th, with opening night. There are tickets on sale now. So, an opportunity in the Commonwealth for some live racing in earnest, both at Keeneland and Churchill in April.
Well, we'll pass it along as it as the news comes out. Ed, let's get a couple of racing recap thoughts. We talked going into the weekend. It's funny, we didn't know that Laurel was going to be tabled until Saturday, but we did get, we were able to talk Fairgrounds. And, fairly, other than Captivating Moon, who was probably, way too high of a price than he deserved, pretty much a formful set of results in NOLA. Some thoughts about Star and Alex and the Rachel?
Well, I think my impression to the points races for the three-year-olds is Fairgrounds, for whatever reason, this trend of the filly races being more productive for their, end goal that the points go toward, I think seems to be in play this year as well. I thought those two fillies were fabulous, way back to third career start for Clairiere, getting the job done over a very well-regarded travel column. Scott Shapiro, my colleague, had them 1-2 in his Oaks poll, and that might seem to be prescient. I had them both in my top 10, so a lot of respect for them as well, but definitely moved Clairiere up with the win, and two exciting prospects for sure. I appreciated the professionalism of Mandaloon, and certainly the blinker switch may have contributed to getting the W. Overall, with the LeComp trifecta coming right back and boxing it in the Risen Star, still kind of a little dubious of the overall talent there. Senor Buscador just kind of flattened out, maybe too far out of it going 9 furlongs. I don't want to completely give up on him yet, but I felt like if he were a real Derby type, he could have sustained his run a little bit more than what we saw. So the long and short of it is I'm buying the Rachel Alexandra and selling the Risen Star.
Interesting. I've touched on it the last 2 days, and I'm sure we'll also, we'll talk more with Haskin tomorrow and Jay on Friday. But I ended up taking the 39-1.
Of course, in really good form with that one on top. And then local connections with Bonaventure and Royal Bonnie Legacy, the number 4, comes off a nice win in a conditional claimer, but I think seems to be in good form, playable. 6-4-2 in the ninth at Tampa.
There you go. So 4-6-5-2, 4-3-10-5, 4-6-8-7, 6-4-2 to close out the pick four, and it felt like the 4 and 6 were a little heavier leans if people want to go narrow in that.
Yeah, there's a couple spots where you can narrow down, I think.
Yeah, maybe 4 by 4 by 2 by 3. There you go. There's a $48 pick four ticket from the face of GoTV, Seth Merrow 2 on your Twitter machine. Seth, thank you. That was nice finish. A fun morning.
Thank you, and good luck.
Seth Merrow, everybody, my TV partner. This was another tongue is hanging out here. Thanks to Mattress Mac, Jim McInvale, this morning, the visit, pay tribute to his incredible generosity. Dave Hill, a lot of fun. Those two great features. Sid Fernando, Sire Watch, Pedigree Focus, brought to you by Hill and Dale. Twin Spires, Ed DeRosa, and Capital OTB's Seth Merrow. Good luck today, everybody. Obviously, continued best wishes and safe. Hope people are getting through this and you get your power back as soon as possible. Hate to see the suffering and the danger so many people are in. Talk to you tomorrow, 9 o'clock, Sirius XM, at the races. Talk to you then.
latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
Why, in the past decade, has BRL Equine become the premier equine supplement company in the industry? Because we spend millions in research and development before we ever put out a product. Because we use only FDA-supervised facilities to manufacture for us. Because what we say is in them is in them. Because they work. Because if you're not happy, I'll give you your money back. And because top trainers and veterinarians in thoroughbred racing, standardbred racing, three-day eventing, and barrel racing all trust in BRL Equine. Shouldn't you? To find out more how Flexify HA, Unlock, Bleeder Shield, and EPO Equine can help you, contact me, Joseph Vellante, 215-501-6880.